How about those numbers around rates, eh?
Homeowners across the country are facing average rates rises of 15%.
When you break it down further, that is an extra $416 a year.
Eye-watering increases are on the cards. Buller District Council with 31.8%.
The Hamilton City Council is proposing a 19.9% rates rise.
Greater Wellington Regional Council, 20% this year.
Napier homeowners, 24%.
Double-digit rates hikes,
16.9%.
Central Otago, 25%.
Might have seen a story today from Rakiura, Stewart Island, where a landowner tried to fight a 500% rates hike.
Kia ora, I'm Tom Kitchen, and are you overwhelmed yet? From the far north to Stewart Island, double, even triple-digit rates rises. So many Kiwis will get a shock when the rates bills hit their letterboxes or inboxes in the coming months. The biggest increases in more than 35 years. And while you might think it only affects homeowners, if you're a renter, expect your landlord to pass that hike onto you.
Up and up it goes, the rising cost of rent.
I feel like I'm paying way too much and not getting enough for what I'm paying for.
Today on The Detail, what's behind the rapid rates rises? Sam Broughton is the mayor of the Selwyn district, and he's also the president of advocacy group Local Government New Zealand. He describes the situation councils are in right now as a challenge.
Over my time in council, so since 2010, most councils like to talk about 3, 4 or 5% rates increases. You know, if you're hitting 6, that was quite a high increase. This year, 6 is the lowest increase in percent for rates increase that anyone's doing. The range is 6 to 25. And that's dramatically different than every other conversation councils have had. One or two councils over the last 3 or 4 years have had larger increases because of whether it's been around water, wastewater, or particular projects within their districts. But this year, everyone, it's a national conversation. We're all having this really challenging convo with the community. Councils now are looking well above 10s. The average is 15.3 across the country for our draft long-term plans.
You said the highest is about 25%, did you say? I've heard stories of in Buller, say, over 30, and there was one story of 500%. Have you heard those?
Yeah, I've heard that in reports. The numbers that I've used was I messaged all of the mayors and chairs of our councils 6 or 8 weeks ago and just asked them for their indicative numbers before it was confirmed. If we'd asked in October last year, the numbers would have been 70s and 80s around the country.
70 or 80%?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah. So councils saw those numbers and have, you know, asked their staff to do some more work because that's just not affordable to continue to think about those sorts of lifts. So since Christmas, we've seen a whole lot of things cut out of budgets to make sure that the numbers, I mean, still 20-25 is high. My conversation with my community here in Selwyn, 16, it's so much higher than what anyone wants to be talking about. But we've done a lot to try and bring that cost back.
So all this came out into the open through an infometrics report that you commissioned, right, as Local Government New Zealand.
The report released today by Infometrics shows local government costs are only growing.
We understood that there was always going to be cost escalation in this space. However, the cost escalation that's come through for local government has been substantially more than anyone had forecast.
Was there anything in that report that made you go, wow?
To see bridges lift over 30%, while the roading and the water and wastewater are all about that 30% mark. So it means, you know, when we were doing our long-term plans 3 years ago, all of those costs are now 30% up. That's the base level of lift that lots of us are looking at, 10%. If you're not doing 10%, it's actually really hard to just do the things we thought we were able to do last year, let alone the new things that our community expects of us.
So, for example, bridges are 38% more expensive than 3 years ago. So, in reality, that means that you have to weigh up whether you repair a bridge that's falling apart.
Yep, and we've got a bridge in Selwyn and White Cliffs that was damaged through flooding. At the moment, school buses can't get across it. Rubbish collection can't get across it. The forestry, the livestock transport can't use their bridge. So there's detours in place and you can go around the long way, but that's in the middle of a community. That starts to affect community cohesion. It just gets people really annoyed that they can't use that for what they would like to do. And so as a council, that's in our long-term plan to fix, but that's 38 percent more expensive than what we thought it was going to be 3 years ago.
What I was quite shocked by was the $11 billion hold or gap from what was planned last time councils did their long-term plans to now. $11 billion in 3 years?
Yeah, and it seems like since COVID, you can't talk about things in the millions anymore. Everything's billions of dollars. And with the inflationary costs, you know, adding to that, that doesn't help.
Now, why is this all happening? You know, we talk about all these trends of things getting more expensive and more expensive and more expensive.
I think there's a number of reasons why. Councils are very limited in the way that we can fund things. So rates paying for over half of council expenses is standard across the country. It means that it's a pretty blunt tool to be able to raise revenue. On top of that, there's some user charges, and some councils have some investments, but many don't have those investments as well. So when your only tool is rates, that means this conversation comes around to a bill in the mail that landowners and property owners pay for, and renters pay for in their rent as well, but they don't receive the bill. It generates quite a large amount of conversation. With those limited tools, it's meant that communities have generally asked for rates to be low. COVID came along. We had on Selwyn just over 1.7% lift. Some councils had zeros. Some councils had higher numbers.
And your rates bill, was that like the 2020 year?
Yeah, that's what the community was asking for. So you do that, but if that year should have been a 7 or an 8 or a 10 or a 12, that means we're all of a sudden creating, you know, a gap between what should have been collected and what the real need is. So this year, councils are all at the same time recognising that the conversation's got to change, that we need to think about essential infrastructure in a different way. And that when the only tool is rates, then rates are going to have to pay for it.
Just tell me about the situation in Selwyn and what's going on there with your proposals this year.
Yeah, so in Selwyn, we're looking at 16% rates increases this year. It's about three times higher than what we would like the conversation to be and what our community has generally seen and expected from us. That means that we're doing a lot of status quo things, fixing essential infrastructure and preparing for further growth. 16% is a challenging conversation, I get that, and I know we're going to get a lot of feedback on it, but if we don't do that, we need to identify what we're willing to sacrifice. There's no more trimming to be done. It's actually, this is the hard conversation about now, we'll just have to stop or not do some things. And I don't think that's really the sell one that I know.
Another new report by the Infrastructure Commission has spelt out the financial strains councils are under, and it's made suggestions for overcoming debt issues. Ollie Lewis, the infrastructure editor at Business Desk, has been looking into that report, which was discussed at a recent Infrastructure New Zealand conference in Wellington.
And it was about council debt limits and how debt-constrained councils actually are. There's been a lot of discussion recently about councils having these very large double-figure rates rises and kind of reaching their debt ceilings because of all the infrastructure deficit that they have not paid for generations, like pipes and roads.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the report was essentially kind of laying out what the picture is like in terms of how much debt councils are carrying in New Zealand, and then kind of comparing it against historical levels. Like, so councils back in the early 1900s and after World War II, they were carrying kind of 4 to 5 times as much debt as councils today. So
wow.
They were a lot more leveraged because they were building out all their infrastructure kind of networks, all their roads and tram lines and pipes. When you compare historically, we're actually seeing kind of current local government, it's not particularly leveraged compared to previous kind of periods.
So it's not particularly debt-ridden.
That's right, yeah. So like debt levels have been increasing, to be very clear. Like they're definitely kind of going up. Back in the early 1900s, for instance, like cities were just kind of forming in New Zealand. And so it was a period when towns and cities were building their roads, they were building their pipes. You know, they were kind of expanding to meet the growing population kind of needs.
So they had to go into debt to fund those things.
Yeah, they were paying for growth. They were taking on a lot of debt to pay for the infrastructure that they needed to enable them to expand and to become kind of mature cities. Whereas like now we have this legacy infrastructure that our ancestors built, all these roads and pipes, and they're starting to get towards the end of life because we have not maintained them very well over the previous kind of several decades. And so councils are spending a lot more on just renewing existing assets, like existing pipes or whatever, instead of kind of building growth infrastructure because it's hard to do both and have enough money to do both.
And they don't want to reach those debt levels that they had historically.
Yeah, so that's more to do with the there's this thing called the Local Government Funding Agency, which is kind of member councils. All the councils in New Zealand are kind of members, and it allows them to take on debt, typically at lower levels than they would by themselves. It's like an efficiency of scale, because they all band together to get cheaper finance. And so LGFA has a debt ceiling. So it sets the 280 or thereabouts percentage rate for councils. So that's why they can't kind of go over it.
The report does say that from the mid-1990s, local government has increased debt to finance in that ratio, but revenue hasn't increased at a similar rate. Why has revenue not increased?
Yeah, that's the really interesting part about the report. So what are the figures? Some good figures here, Tom. There's a lot of figures in this report.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And so I think, they kind of point out this period as like a historical outlier. So like previously, councils had a lot of debt, but they were also increasing revenue at about the same rate as they were taking new debt on. From like 2009 to 2022, which is the more recent period that they've looked at, debt across all councils increased by 226%, and revenue, which is rates, really, increased by 42% over the period.
Quite so, significant difference, yeah.
Quite a lot. What is that, like 180 percentage points? That's a lot of... It's a big difference. And so what that means, essentially, is that we've been investing in perhaps renewing existing assets, which don't bring you more revenue because you're just fixing what you already have. We haven't necessarily been investing as much in perhaps new roads or new revenue kind of generating bits of infrastructure that can allow you to raise rates higher. So Anne Tolley spoke at this conference. She's a commissioner in Tauranga.
The former National MP chairs the commission that took over in Tauranga after the dysfunctional council there was sacked by the local government minister in 2020.
She's in a pretty enviable position, most local body government politicians would think, because she is not elected. She is appointed, and so she's got a lot more leeway about what she can and can't do. She pretty much said at the conference that she'd never vote for a politician who promised to keep rates low or even at the rate of inflation, because she felt that would mean her town or city was going backwards.
Quite honest.
Very honest. And she kind of said that she'd been doing some Googling before she came to the conference, and she said, well, the average rates bill is like $2,700 a year, and the average power bill is like $2,300. And power is just obviously one service. Rates covers a whole ton of stuff, like, you know, your pipes, your roads, your parks, your everything. She was pretty much saying this: there's no wonder why local government is broke. Like, we're expected to do all of this stuff, yet we're not really charging what a fair rate of return should be for what we're required to invest.
So she thinks rates should go up astronomically.
Yeah, I'd actually be very curious to know what Anne Tolley thinks the ideal rates rise would be.
FYI, Tauranga City faces rates rises of an average 15.8% this year.
She clearly is of the view that they haven't risen quickly enough in recent years to kind of keep up with the cost of providing infrastructure and services to communities.
Has there been a reluctance to by local government to increase revenue because they're like potentially afraid of the backlash of increasing rates? Was it more complicated than that?
No, I think that's pretty much it. Yeah. I think it's pretty simple. It's this kind of fear of any backlash from the community. They're worried that if they go to the polls and they say, hey, we're going to hike your rates by 25%, all the good people of Christchurch or Tauranga or whatever are going to turn around and say, I don't want this person in office. Give me someone who's proposing 10% or like 5%. And the consequence of this is that over time, you just don't raise enough revenue to cover your costs. Then you start taking a bit more debt to kind of, you know, do these repairs to your existing networks. And this really screws future generations. So young people should be quite rightfully, I think, mad about this. Because the more debt-constrained councils are right now, the less opportunity future generations have to finance their own priorities. So in 10, 20 years, we'll still be paying off the debt associated with fixing pipes that should have been just paid for by rates revenue, for instance. But you can understand why it's happened, because homeowners don't want to pay more money.
yeah, God, mortgage rates are already sky high, aren't they, and interest rates. So,
well, this is the thing, right? It's like we've been left in this very unenviable position where, like, a lot of these kind of costs are catching up with us all at once, and it sucks for the people that actually have to bear the burden of increasing rates to perhaps what they should have been in previous years. So we're playing catch-up, essentially.
Yeah, so what are some solutions that this report talks about and other people you've spoken to talk about to try and even out this issue of debt getting higher and revenue not increasing?
Yeah, there's a couple options. So, like, Anne Tolley was pretty interesting. There's this phrase, to get your mojo back. The Prime Minister uses it a lot.
We want to be a country that gets our mojo back.
She used it for local government at this conference, that local government needs to get its mojo back. And what she was talking about was, in her view, councils haven't used the tools available to them. A lot of local government politicians, I think rightly, say that there's just not enough kind of funding and financing tools available. And local government likes to talk about other funding and financing tools that it wants access to. And so one of the big ones that councils are talking about a lot at the moment is having the government or the Crown pay rates on government-owned properties.
Oh, Wayne Brown's talked about that, hasn't he?
Wayne Brown wants central government to start paying rates on their Auckland properties. He reckons the city would benefit from more than $400 million in revenue if the rates were paid on the government buildings and if the GST charged on rates was given back to him.
Mine is a very good offer. Yeah. I mean, I'm solving their problem.
The mayor in Auckland is definitely very keen on this. He has said that, I think he actually sent the finance minister a bill, which I think is quite funny.
Chris,
very bold.
The government's not keen, though.
Government is definitely not keen.
Mr Luxon says he won't be granting the request.
The government, despite its talk of localism, is understandably not particularly happy to part with a lot of money right now, given the books are quite tight, and it doesn't want to kind of pay all the additional kind of rates to local councils. But in principle, you can see why it would be a good idea. And it would help local councils kind of keep rates slightly lower.
And it was recommended by the Future of Local Government review too.
Well, a review into local government has completely reimagined the way councils operate. It wants a shake-up of income streams for councils so there's less reliance on rates.
Jim Palmer, the chair of that panel, he spoke at this conference as well. He was interesting, actually. He kind of referred to this idea of peak rates, which I think is around, if I understand him correctly, around like the social license to increase rates further. So like he was kind of saying when they released the report, there was an idea at the time that we'd already kind of reached peak rates. But clearly that's not actually the case because councils are still levying higher and higher rates onto their residents at the moment. But I think he's pretty concerned about the fact that there aren't tools other than rates to help raise that money. He wants a bigger toolkit, that's how they like to talk about it.
What could this toolkit Ollie talked about look like? Back to Sam Broughton.
We think the government should open up new avenues for income for local government. And we've talked to the government about those. I mean, we just saw fuel tax taken away from Auckland. That was a local way of paying for some local things. It wasn't rates. I know there's other councils around the country that would like to see fuel tax collected locally or regionally for them as well. There's been a bed tax or a tourist levy conversation. The share of GST that's taken on rates. So you've got GST paid on top of the local rates tax that you're paying, if that came back to councils, it would make a big difference. There's conversations about the government paying rates for the assets within a district. So DOC doesn't pay anything, Ministry for Defence doesn't pay anything, Ministry for Education doesn't pay rates, all those things, that would also contribute. But a lot of those things are kind of just squeezing the New Zealand tax system differently because that's money the government's currently accounted for and they'd have to, Treasury's already got that money locked in. So if local government was to take that, that would mean there'd be new income required for the government to pay it. So what we need to think about is new income. And I like the way that the Chris Bishop recently talked about the GST on new house builds coming back to local councils. That would make a big difference.
Housing Minister Chris Bishop is contemplating sharing a portion of GST collected on new residential builds with councils as an incentive to build more houses.
Particularly for those that are growing and have lots of house builds, for those that don't, other tools will be required. So there's not a silver bullet here. It's just we're very constrained by rates being the only tool. We need a toolbox approach with lots of tools there for councils to pick the best one.
Well, some of those ideas that you talk about that would work well, the government's already said no to them, or this has already come up in a review, like that Future of Local Government review that the Labor government's commissioned. So don't we already have these ideas? Shouldn't we already be getting on and doing them?
Well, I think at the moment, everyone's pointing the finger at local government as the ones responsible for large rates increases. Actually, the central government is responsible for large rates increases because that's the only tool we've got to pay for the infrastructure that New Zealand needs. And so this won't just be a one-year conversation. This will be a multi-year conversation of large rates increases for councils. The key reason for that is the New Zealand government, because they only provide the one tool for us to be able to gather the income required to serve our communities, and that's rates.
What about this local government review? There was this idea for the government to pay rates on buildings it owns, and there were all these other moves there. What happened to that review?
So that review's still there. Local Government New Zealand picked it up and said, let's see what we can come together on, because there were some ideas in there where, you know, it's pretty 50-50 amongst the local government community as to whether or not we would want to support them. We ran a couple of processes, a couple hundred people, elected members and chief executives in a room to say, what can we do with this report? And over two long days, voting on each of the and discussing each of the recommendations, we said, actually, there's a whole lot here that we can hold on to. Partnership with government has to be central. A change to the funding mechanisms has to be there. Partnership with mana whenua and a growing commitment to Te Tiriti must be there. And so those areas are ones that we've now focused on. And the government's been pretty clear with us. They aren't going to pick up that report and just run with it. But if there's things that local government comes together on, then they're willing to listen to that.
So it doesn't sound like the national government's just going to throw this report out because it was a Labor initiative?
No, no, they haven't said they've thrown it out, but they will only pick up the bits where they believe there's good consensus to move forward on.
But isn't it hard to agree amongst all, how many councils are there in the country?
Well, yeah, there's 78. The decisions that we had around the future by local government had over 75% for each of the areas of advocacy, and a couple of the areas were over 95%. And funding, with the rates conversation we've got now, funding has to be it. The government has to change local government income streams, and we've got to move beyond just a rates-only approach.
Well, I feel, Sam, like we've been having this conversation for years and years and years, and there's been no change. How can you be sure that anything is going to change?
Oh, I think that's probably the conversation that needs to be had about the shape of Aotearoa New Zealand. And, you know, do we need a constitutional conversation? And I think we do, about how we make decisions. Government by government can take a different approach. We're a creature of statute. There's some legislation that sets up local government. You know, it's really easy to be doing one thing and then 3 years later having to do another. I think a constitutional conversation would set something up that says local government is hugely important to New Zealand communities, and we know that when we talk to our communities. We're so close to the communities to be able to deliver for them that it shouldn't just be the whim of the government that gets to determine what can and can't be done and how we can and can't be funded.
That's it for today. The DSL is funded through RNZ and NZ On Air. Thanks to our guests Sam Broughton and Ollie Lewis. This episode was produced by Alexia Russell, Gwen McClure and Davina Zimmer. It was engineered by William Saunders. I'm Tom Kitchen. Ma te wa.